have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
The brilliant shot. Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He scores! Australia have got it!
Hello, Doc. How you going?
Hello, my son. How you going?
Just going to open myself a cheeky little Malbec. Let's get this party started.
What part
started.
Of the world's that from?
Actually, I don't know. I drank an Australian Malbec last night. It was fantastic. This one's an Argentinian one.
Yeah, the Argentine, the weather seems to, weather and Malbec seem to work well with Argentina.
Mm. Yeah, it's become my, my favorite red wine, and it's not as common as you would. Well, in my price range, it's not as common as I would like. So when
10 bucks and underneath,
yeah, pretty much.
Actually, I got a one of the online wine places here was doing an Argentine Malbec for 10 bucks a bottle. We went through heaps of it.
Yeah,
it was just so fucking smooth and
quaffable.
Syrupy.
I think the term I used to
it's almost creamy. It's just so big and round. You know, it's just such a wonderful.
I'm drinking out of a very big and round glass. So
but that's for our other podcast this week in piss that cost less than $10.
That'd be a good podcast, actually. Yeah. So there's a bit of sport happening, strangely enough, for the dead time of year for us.
Oh, the dead door. The NBA season never seems to switch off.
No, I think that's the way they like it.
Yeah, that is. I mean, they'll have a little bit of a dead time post Olympics, before preseason. But that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, September might be a little bit quieter.
Well, I have to say, you know, I have my league pass teams that I like to follow, that I sort of like to look after, and you know, a couple of years ago, Golden State sort of, as they were coming up. With that team, and like they'll be watchable next year. Like you'll just, you'll have to watch them just to if they get on a hot streak to see what they might actually do.
Yeah, they might not be a put,
but Russ
in the way that they were for the last half of the season.
No, but Russ and the Thunder are just going to be. You're like if they're playing, I'll
Russ
definitely switch it on to see the flames coming out of Russell's ears as he walks onto the court every night. It's going to be good fun.
He's keen. He's real keen. And that's probably saved not only the contest in the West, but it might have saved the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah,
you could definitely see a world in which they lose Durant and Westbrook for nothing, and they're in the smallest market in the Western Conference and probably in the league, and they just disappear. And that'd be a shame. I mean, they don't deserve to exist. Because they never should have moved that team from Seattle, but it would still be a shame to see it disappear. And I am kind of glad that he decided to, and it's very Russ to stay and fight on your own and fucking fuck some people up who pissed you off. And of course, but the thing is, the deal benefits him. And so, folks, the deal is that he signed an extension that takes him through to the 18-19 season.
It's basically a one-year extension because he's got an opt-out.
It's a three-year contract, but there's a player option after 2 years.
Yep, and he had one more year left anyway.
Yeah, and that's at the point that he's played 10 years in the NBA. And once you've had 10 years veteran status, you get a bigger percentage of the max.
You'll get paid all the money.
You can get more of all the money. So it benefits him. He gets basically they just renegotiated the end of his contract.
Mm.
He gets the OKC only have to pay effectively $9 million more, but they lock him in for a bit longer. They buy himself enough time to try and build something because they were in a situation where if he turned down the extension, basically they knew they were fucked. They had to trade him and just start from scratch.
They were going to start from scratch. And look, it works out good for both parties because
exactly.
I think the understanding is. If either side after 1 year feel that it's not really working, then he's actually got more trade value. So
exactly right.
They can get more for him, and he'll still be young enough that he can go wherever he likes.
gives them the opportunity to actually build a team, which they didn't have before. They've actually got Presti's got 1 year to try and stitch something together. And that's more than no years, which is what he had previously. So
well, I think it'll
makes
be
everyone
more
money, and it gives everyone a chance to survive.
I think he'll get 1 year and one free agency period, because I'd be very interested to see next year. Like, they'll obviously, Russ will probably want to go and try and convince someone to come and play with him. You know, that'll be the next big challenge for him. Now, it's really interesting some of the little things that have come out after this.
It really depends what next summer's, just to barge in, it really depends what next summer's lockout looks like, what next summer's arbitration looks like, because the end of next summer, all bets are off. We don't know what the contracts are going to look like. So whether it's even going to be, is it going to be more or less feasible for Russ to bring another superstar across? Or are all the super teams getting broken up and every team gets a superstar?
Yeah, that's right. One of the really interesting little tidbits that I found was that came out, that was Durant's sort of best mates for the last 3 or 4 years have all been personalities not on the team. And Russ's best mates are Steven Adams and Collison. You know, that's who he hangs with. So,
and some of Durant's best mates are those Hillsong types.
Yeah, but if you'd said
in the US Hillsong movement,
if you said 3 years ago, which player do you think is going to cut and run for the bright lights, you would have put all your money on Russ, wouldn't you?
Yeah, a lot of that was about narrative, though.
And I know, that's what I mean.
I put that out in an NBA podcast recently, saying a lot of this stuff is based on supposition, the fact that, oh, Russ likes fashion and he's from LA, so of course he wants to go and play for the Lakers. He's never indicated at any stage he wanted to play for the Lakers.
Did you see Enos Kanter troll on Twitter?
I did hear about this, he's crying Jordan to Laker fan.
I don't follow him, but someone retweeted it into my timeline, and it was just hilarious.
I might have to start following him, because I mean, most of his good stuff is retweeted by Stephen Adams, because they're Mo Bros. The Lakers were never actually in the contest, and now it's like they've lost the contest, but they were never in it. I mean, Westbrook wants to win.
I don't think they're in.
He was never going to the Lakers. He might have gone to the Clippers, but he's never.
I think he could have gone to the Lakers as a free agent, because they've got young contracts that they can trade, and those young guy contracts are very valuable in the league.
But not if he's 3 years away and he's already done 10 years in the league.
Yeah,
I think Russ is only going to play for win now teams from now until the end of his career, because he knows that his dynamism is that a word? If that's a word, it's a word. Means
yeah, it has
that
a shelf
he's going to be injury.
Yeah, he's not going to.
Yeah, he's got a short fuse.
He's not going to age like Chris Paul, that's for sure.
He's not going to age like Tim Duncan.
No, and the thing is, like, you saw it last year with the Cavs winning. All you need is a couple of injuries, or someone punching someone else in the balls and getting suspended.
Being buggered ass.
Yeah, you just never know the way the things are going to break. And if they've got a team that wins 45 games, then they're in the conversation. All you got to do is get the finals and have a bit of luck.
Yeah.
You've obviously got to be very, very good as well. But sometimes things can just break right for you. And, yeah, I just think it's great. I'm really happy. I reckon that side's going to be tight. I reckon they're really going to play hard for each other. And the other thing is,
they deserved another shot, didn't they? They did such a good job in the conference finals that it was such a gutting shame to see them ripped apart. You think, fuck, these guys need another crack. They need the opportunity to do that again. And now it's not the same because Durant isn't there, but at least they're in the fucking contest.
You laugh at my coaching talk, but one of the hardest things to...
Oh, you took that personally. sorry, folks. So Bezo was complaining he was having trouble putting his kid to sleep, and I said, maybe you should talk to him about your touch football coaching.
Sick burn. But sometimes one of the hardest things to do as a coach is when you've got two really dominant players. Like, it's really hard to build, because you work with those players to determine, the way you're going to play and the way you're going to defend and what sort of attack you're going to run. But if you've got two of them, you're sort of trying to keep both of them happy and But when you've got one clearly alpha dog player, you can really sort of create a bit of a bond with them and say, okay, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? How can I get you to, you know, give Steven Adams more touches in the post? Look, it's actually easier to work with one dominant player than two dominant players. At least that's what I found. So I wouldn't be surprised if Donovan actually coaches even better this year, because hello.
And we know what Westbrook looks like when he's uncaged. Remember that. I'm still here.
Yeah, I got you. Sorry. Westbrook uncaged looks like something out of the Matrix movies.
All right, you just did that. But we know what Westbrook looks. Yeah, we know what Westbrook looks like when he's uncaged. We remember that 2014 season where he just went completely. Now they didn't play that well because they didn't have anyone else around them.
Hmm.
But that's a that could be a lot of fun. Even if they're not much better than they were previously, they're going to be more entertaining because it's going to be like watching the Expendables every night.
Yeah, that's right. And you just, they'll be the sort of side that will, if you roll into their gym and you're not sort of taking it seriously or you're a bit tired from a back-to-back, I think they'll just run you off the floor. Like, I think they'll pick up games that they're not expected to win simply because they'll just run hard all the time. Because the other guys that they've pulled into the team, like Oladipo, are also guys that like to run and run hard all the time.
Yep.
Fuck yes. One man, he's the sort of man, he looks like he's always had the attitude of sort of someone in a Jet Li movie. You know, he's going to take him on his own.
Yeah.
Outnumbered and outgunned.
Well, I always think of the bride in Kill Bill with all of the shrieking Asians running at her and just laying waste with the sword. And that's how I imagine Russ. When I imagine Russ actually thinks himself like that as he walks out, theme music and all.
I was thinking more, you know, less racial profiling, but, you know, we can't all be, be good people.
That's true. I'm definitely not one of those. So there's a bit of cricket happening.
I was thinking more, you know, Chow Yun-Fat walking through the hospital in Hard Boiled with the baby in his arm, just a waste of people.
Who said Test cricket's dead? This is freaking an awesome week of Test cricket.
Who said Test cricket's dead? Anybody watching?
Mm.
Because there aren't anybody watching except for the nerds on the internet. But it's been entertaining. There's three test matches that have been going on this last week.
Yep.
In the most exciting of all, New Zealand beat Zimbabwe by an innings and more runs than Australia scored in their first innings.
How many centuries did Williamson get? Well, actually, there's four tests going on. Aren't the Windies playing someone as well?
Oh, yeah. Windies are playing India over the way.
Yeah, I think they drew. I think they pulled out a draw out of their ass.
At their court. Actually, just we're not going to talk about New Zealand, but just to say that New Zealand have actually won 50% of the tests that they've played since Mike Hessen took over. They're ranked 3 in the world. They are, I mean, they still can't beat Australia in Australia, but they're a very good test side.
Well, Australia might be the last real flat track bullies. So, like, you know, England could, is it, England's only a 3-test series, isn't it? So if they lose this one, that's it. They lose. It's a 4-test series, isn't it?
The England-Pakistan series, I think, is 4.
Okay, because
they've got the two London venues, the Oval and Lords, and they've got Edgbaston and Old Trafford.
Because I wondered, because they'd played 3 against Sri Lanka already, so.
Well, they've got lots of places they can play tests in England. Like,
Oh yeah, they got to spread them around. The interesting thing about the sort of whole week of Test cricket and getting back to the two-tier thing, but
of which we can see very little.
And I want to link that back into the Olympics in a little bit, but
foreshadowing, folks.
If Pakistan win this test and Australia lose, both things which look quite possible, Pakistan.
I would say probable at this stage.
Yeah, more than likely.
Because folks, if you've missed it, Pakistan went into. They're about to start day three. Pakistan are 3 down for 260-odd. They're only 40 behind England's all-out score. And they're only 3 down because the dude who batted all day got out in the last ball. So
yeah,
they should be all right to knock out a reasonable first innings lead there.
And England are not the sort of side. Well, they can sort of come back in tests, but the guy that sort of has been doing that for them is injured. So,
Jimmy Anderson's back.
Yeah, he's back, but like he's sort of like an upfront weapon. If he hasn't run through them already now, I wouldn't expect him to do it.
He's at the stage of his career where he should be turning himself into an old ball master.
Yeah,
Dennis Lilly style, and I'm sure he's capable of that, but I haven't seen it.
I have to say, Stark now has his best ever test figures on a pitch that is not for fast bowlers. It's pretty impressive.
True, and it's also not for spinners. You know who it's not for? Batsmen who have got no fucking patience.
No idea, yeah.
So well, Australia got bowled out in a session, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
They were going all right at sort of 1 for 50 odd last night. And then Warner just had a fucking Warner brain explosion and got out.
He had a Warner, that's what he had.
He had a Warner. He had a fucking Davy Dum Dum moment. Mm. And Davy Dum Dum chucked his toys out the pram and then Australia just completely packed up. They got rolled in within less than a session, in 106 minutes.
And the thing was, a lot of the balls that got them were not the big spinning balls. They were the straight balls.
Kawaja got out to a fucking arm ball.
Yeah. But
Kawaja, the one guy you'd rely on to be able to play fucking spin, given that he got into the side by playing spin on subcontinental decks.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, it's literally a mind fucking. You know, they're that worried about the turn. It's the balls that aren't turning that are getting them. And to
Can
be
I
fair
bring you
to
back
the
to earlier in the week, where in the preview to the second Sri Lanka Australia test, Darren Lehman was asked what Australians batsmen have to do, and he said they've got to be better decision makers.
Hmm. But
just saying it doesn't make it happen, Darren.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Like, Holland's getting carted around a bit, right?
New Holland's a bit agricultural, I understand. He's ploughing a very lonely furrow.
But the thing is, how often has Holland bowled for, two-thirds of a day in Shield cricket? Like, there's no pitches in Australia that are going to encourage him to bowl for two-thirds of a day. Maybe half of the last day in Sydney or something, but he's not.
But then again, most Shield matches aren't played at the SCG. They're played at fucking Blacktown or
something. That's what I mean. But what is... When's the last Shield game that a Shield side took three spinners into, like Sri Lanka have into this test? This just doesn't exist. We can't expect to go into
these... Are we one note? Because we keep banging on this fucking anvil, but it's true. There is no preparation being done for any circumstance that isn't the exact circumstance that the Australians play in.
This is the thing.
Not
this is
win
the
this test matches in Asia. We keep losing... keep losing test matches in Asia.
Thanks, mate. I do it all myself. No, the thing is, personally, I found out that's actually not true, that at the Cricket Academy, at their preparation place in Brisbane, they've spent huge amounts of money replicating Indian and Sri Lanka pitches. But
it's not working.
No, but the thing is, right, so I used to train, when I first started coaching and I was still sort of young enough to run around with the guys, I used to train with them.
Young bloke's asleep, isn't he?
He is, yes. But the thing is, there is a massive difference between training and playing. You know, the intensity, the mind factor, everything. It's just not the same. You can have the best pitches at a training ground, but it's not the same as having a pitch that turns sideways in a Shield game that actually is worth points and is actually going to the fact that if we had two or three massive spinning pitches and we knew which players played spin well at those pitches in games that mattered, then we might actually pick this side a little bit differently.
You know what I would do if I was the head of New South Wales cricket? I would go and raid all the other states for all their best spinners.
Spinners, and then just turn the SCG.
And get my fucking ground staff to make Mumbai turners. Yeah. And if I was the head of the WACA, I would raid the place for all the best quicks.
Yeah,
seamers that just fuck people up,
and batsmen that only like to play on the back foot and hook and pull.
and each state becomes a centre of excellence.
You know, no, don't get any. Yeah, absolutely, and
it also becomes more interesting to watch. I mean, I'd watch that.
But the thing is, right, and I find this with Touch Football Australia as well, is that centres of excellence and stuff like that, the reason they exist is because what administrations don't want to do is have stuff that's out of their control.
Yeah, and they've got a curriculum and they want you to implement the curriculum.
That's right. They want you to say, this is a word that I hear all the time, we've got a system. Are you in the system? So, like, I'm not in the Australian touch football system. I'm not one of their system coaches. So
more like cistern, because toilet, am I right?
Well,
zing, right, like on, hashtag.
The thing is, if you're Australian touch, you can have a system. It doesn't matter. You win everything anyway. So, like, it's a little bit self-replicating. But for something like Australian cricket, you can have all the systems in your world. You go over to these guys, you go into their backyard, and you're playing on a pitch the likes that you've never seen in an actual game, and all of a sudden it's a little bit hard. Like, you take Usman Khawaja, right? Like you said, he played that A-series, he's a good player of spin, and yet you watch some of his shot selection and you would just think that he'd never played anywhere except the Gabba.
Yeah, and that same for Steve Smith, who's probably one of the best players of spin in that side, and he's toilet.
Well, he definitely moves his feet the most.
Stupid decisions.
And, yeah, he's had one good innings, but that's actually why.
That's what pressure does, and that's why you need to, in order to be able to reproduce a skill under pressure, you need to spend 10 times as much time learning how to do it under no pressure.
Yeah.
So that when you're under pressure, you can execute the skill without actually having to fucking think about it. And you know this as a coach, that's why you do all that fucking training, is so that you can embed the skill in muscle memory so that it's, you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah. And look, their attitude after the first test loss was actually really encouraging, because unlike a lot of other sides that have just basically shrugged and gone, well, we're playing in Sri Lanka, who cares? You know, we get beaten, it's their pitches, we don't really care.
Yes. Let's go home and have a much more lucrative series.
Yeah, whereas Smith actually said, you know, I want to be remembered as the captain of the side that learnt to play in Asia. And I genuinely believe that
No, we remember who that was. It was Steve Waugh.
Yeah, well,
it was Mark Taylor.
Waugh definitely made the, Waugh was the one that encouraged them to get out of their hotel rooms and actually, you know, live a little in the country so that it didn't feel like you didn't have that mental block of feeling like you were walking into this absolutely unnatural environment when you walked out onto the pitch. You know, if you actually got out and did some tourist stuff, maybe the cricket grounds wouldn't be so intimidating.
Yeah. And that's why we hated him, because Warren's a fuck.
Yeah, that's right. He just wanted to sit in his hotel room and drink Southern Comfort and Coke and eat baked beans. So I'll be really fascinated, because they've just been outplayed. Except for Stark. Stark is the only player in this game that can hold his head up high, because he shouldn't even be taking wickets, and he's the only one keeping Australia anywhere close to just being thrashed.
Yeah.
It reminds me, actually, Kasparovic went on, I think it was an Indian tour, and did a bit of this where you shouldn't play well on these pitches, and he just was our best player. He just
figured out that with effort and with guile.
Yeah, it's just smart. And
aren't going that well in their second innings, but they don't have to be going that well, because they've got a lead of 200 already.
They literally have like 2.5 batsmen. I was talking to Pat this afternoon about it. Like, we have 6 guys that are supposed to be able to bat. Sri Lanka have one guy that's 21 who is a massive talent, but no one's expecting him to carry a side. And his captain, who's a bit patchy, and a couple of other guys that maybe can bat. Like, they haven't got Jai Surya and those guys, and Sangakkara and those guys anymore. They're gone. Mm. And yet we're getting our asses handed to us.
Well, they're building a new narrative for Sri Lankan cricket, which is really kind of cool, because it's those second-tier sides that, and that's really insulting to Sri Lankan cricket, but that's kind of where they are, and they kind of know it. If they're not strong, the whole shooting match is shot to bits. which is interesting given that the fact that we should pour a little bit out for the two-tier test concept because it's dead. It's gone now. Now that India's shot it down, Lanka's against it, Bangladesh is against it, Pakistan's against it. It's done. It's not going to get up now.
We will see. The guy that runs the ICC might have a few tricks left. I don't believe the BCCI is quite the same as what it used to be. We will see.
But if the entire Asian bloc are against it, then you're fucked. It's not getting up. And I think the problem is that if you are a team that's likely to slot into the second tier, yeah, you are fucked. Mm. You're basically trying to sell promotion relegation to a team that's in the Premier League that's on the verge of being relegated.
Yeah.
You're never going to get that across the line, and there's no way you should. I mean, everyone's going to vote for self-interest in that.
Yeah, except that, like, if this test series, right, determined whether or not Sri Lanka went down and they pulled this out, it would be getting so much more media attention than it is now. Like, this is just a one-off test series.
I think it would only matter to Sri Lanka, and Sri Lanka's already paying attention.
No, I think it would matter to the side that's above them, and it would matter to the sides below. Yeah, I don't think so. Like, you look at promotion and relegation, right? How much
Davis Cup are you watching right now?
But Davis Cup is not the pinnacle of the sport. It's not the same. You bring that up every time. It's not the same analogy.
This is the first time I've brought it up in this context.
No, you have before.
How many strawmen do you have in your joint?
Lots.
I live
on a farm, mate. There's lots of straw. It's more loosened, but it's the same thing. But if Pakistan win...
Better loosen up was that Melbourne Cup winner, I understand.
If Pakistan win and Sri Lanka win, Pakistan will be the number one test nation in the world. And that is fucking awesome.
But also it's completely irrelevant and pointless because we know it's not true. We know if they went to South Africa, they get beaten by South Africa. We know if they went to Australia, when they go to Australia, they're going to get beaten by Australia.
Okay.
Because there's so much... If they went to New Zealand, they'd probably lose 2-1. Because that's the nature of Test cricket. Nobody travels well. Oh, fuck, if they come down here, we will kill them.
Okay.
We will fucking kill them. We've killed them every time they've come down before.
I'm not convinced. And this side does travel well because all they do is travel. They don't have a... They don't know what playing at home's like. They only travel.
Ooh, turn the violin. If only my country wasn't full of absolute cunts, I'd be able to play there.
Yeah, but England is one of the best home nations.
As well, true.
One of the best home test nations are playing at home, and they're just about to lose to the side you reckon can't win away from home.
Yes, but England are good because they've pump their stats by playing teams that are terrible at playing in England, like Australia.
Like us.
Yeah, like you.
And they beat New Zealand.
Rubbish idiots.
They've beaten everybody.
I think New Zealand didn't go so badly.
They drew, mate. It was only a two test series. I am not convinced that Pakistan will come down here and lose 3-0.
I know.
And if you still took beer off me, I'd bet some beer on it.
Well, you'd be able to make one of your six packs back. The thing is, I wouldn't bet 3-0 because the weather will probably pack up in one of the test matches, and I won't.
Okay, well, Pakistan
will not take a test match off Australia.
Okay, I think they will.
I am absolutely convinced of that, and we'll put a six pack on that.
Sure, I just think they're much more resilient than.
I don't mind that new Peroni Red, if you can get me a six-pack of that.
Sure. You have the
Bottle-O in Pacific Fair's got that at the moment.
You have Dan Murphy's, don't you?
No.
Oh, really?
No, we don't have Dan Murphy's.
Oh, yeah, because you don't have Woolworths, of course.
We do. Woolworths own one of the local supermarkets here, but we don't need Dan Murphy's because in New Zealand...
Yeah, it's all in the supermarkets.
The supermarkets sell the beer.
When
if you want to buy the beer, you go to the supermarket.
When we first started doing the running challenges with me and a couple of mates that I do the running challenges with, we had a six pack on whatever the first challenge was. And Dan Murphy's do this cool thing where you can, you know, pay for the beer and they just text you when it's ready. And so,
well, I have to brew it. What the fuck?
No. They put it out the front for you to pick up with your name on it, and it's paid for. And there's a register person there and they just text you and say, oh, your beer's ready to pick up. You just come through, pick it up and off you go. You don't have to go in and prove anything. You just take it and go, basically. And so...
Oh, like you're pre-ordering it, effectively.
Yeah, yeah, you're pre-ordering.
The fun of Dan Murphy is wandering up and down the aisles going, oh, fuck, I haven't seen that before. Dan Murphy's, for international listeners, is like an alcohol supermarket. It is basically a big box store. Retail, but just for alcohol. So, beer, wine, and spirits. And it's fun just browsing, just wandering up and down the aisles going, fuck, I've never seen that before.
So anyway, I bought Andy's.
A bit like when we all saw the Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, that's true.
How dare you have that?
I bought Andy a six-pack of beer and put his phone number in. So I was like, oh, well, you won. I'll pay up. And he's like, yeah, whenever I see you. Because he lived in Harvey Bay at the time. It's like, I only saw him twice a year.
And he also knows your fucking history.
So anyway, he gets a text message saying your six-pack of beer is ready to be picked up, Mr. Manton. And he's like, oh, fair play, Bizzo. Didn't know you could do that.
I like the system.
Yeah.
It's amazing what the internet can do these days.
It is.
So Australia are hot garbage in Asia, pretty much like their tourists and backpackers.
Well, as we speak... The lead is out to 362. They got fuck all chance.
Yeah. Well, they had fuck all chance when Lanka were fucking none for none in their second dig.
Well, and it's not like Sri Lanka are going to run out of time. They've got three and a half days left.
They got bowled out for 106. And this is kind of the problem. You and I have been watching Australian cricket for our whole fucking lives.
Yeah.
Can you remember a period of 5 to 10 years in which Australia got bowled out for less than 100 more often? This sort of shit never used to happen.
They're a lot more up and down than they used to be. Like that series.
When they're bad, they're fucking shocking.
Yeah, there was that series in South Africa. The one that 71, wasn't it? Yeah, the one that I really like, Clark, because he got... They got bowled for 71, and then in the second dig, he was the only one that got runs, but they absolutely destroyed his body. They just basically bounced him, and, you know, he came out looking like a bloody pincushion.
Yeah.
We seem to lack that border wicket-keeper combo at 5, 6, or 7 that can just turn... Four or five for 80 into, you know, all out for 190. If we go four or five
when
down,
it's going
we
badly, it, there's yeah, no it just chance collapsed. Of it coming back.
No, we
but
don't have that.
Even Brad
resilience.
Haddon was all right. I mean, admittedly, in that 71, he fucked it. He played an awful shot and was part of the problem. But there was plenty of times in Ashes series where Haddon
in Ashes series, yes, but every
counter attacked and turned. You know, 4 for 80 into.
But that was the thing.
5 for 396.
He counterattacked. He never had that. Like Healy was really good at that. I'm just going to slow the innings down and establish ourselves that we're not going to get out for a while.
Like an opener on a seeming deck trying to see off the new ball.
And
Gilchrist had a little bit of that. It wasn't his natural game, but he did have a little bit of that. Haddon never did.
Smith did it in the second innings in the last game.
Yeah, but Smith should do it because he's a fucking top-order batsman. Every top-order batsman should have the ability to become an opener and shut it down and see off a new ball.
Well, that's the thing.
Particularly someone batting 5 or 6 because you're more often than not going to be seeing the second new ball.
Mm. That's the thing with Davey Warner is that he wasn't playing to the conditions. He just had his eye in.
But he never does.
Yeah. No, he's either...
Imagine if when he's driving, he's going 150 miles an hour in the air. He never drives in the fucking conditions.
No, exactly. He either comes off or he doesn't. And, you know, in Asia, he's just not going
to
come off as many times.
To be fair, when you're opening, that's cool.
Yeah,
and we can't blame him for the fact that the next 8 wickets went for 50 runs or whatever it was.
No, and I think he's actually.
But also, as an opener, you set the tone.
But I think I've read a little bit of stuff from people that are close to the coaching staff in the Australian setup that Warner is actually in there for that. They understand that he either comes, he's like a dodgy firecracker. He either goes off and it's spectacular, or it goes psst, and that's it.
He's like you in the sack.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I know we only had that one time and you were drunk, but still, you can't hold that against me.
One of us was going to do that line and one of us was going to do the other line, and we just went that way. Hashtag banter.
Yes. But Burns is actually the guy that you're probably more upset with, because he's the guy that you take expecting the Marsh Boone.
Yeah, actually, I'm fucked up with Khawaja because we always pick on the brown guy because it's Australia.
Hmm.
But he literally has been hired to do one job, and he's fucked up that job really badly.
Yep.
It's literally what he got hired to do was to play spin on subcontinental pitches.
Yeah, that's right.
And he ain't doing it.
I really hope you're wrong, and maybe I'm just an optimist, but if this was the two-tier system, would we take this side, or would we go...
Yeah, of course we would.
Would we? Okay. Well, maybe we're just arrogant enough to do it.
But they're always... they're going to take the side they think is the best, because the problem is that they haven't seen them play under any other circumstance.
No, that's right. Yeah. How do you know?
So what are your selection criteria? You pick the guys who are scoring runs in the team as it is...
Yeah.
Under the circumstances that you understand, which are probably going to be more like Australian conditions.
It's a little bit like...
What they really need to do is have more variable conditions. And I would love to see... I mean, Australia's a big enough and variable enough place that they could have Candy and Gaul-style wickets up in fucking Cairns, where it's humid as fuck and square. And that would be more interesting to watch as a spectator. I would love to watch that stuff.
And that's the thing that, like, I've always admired Australian cricket, that it's written into the constitutions of the states that their goal is not to win the Shield. Their goal is to provide players for the Australian setup. So if that's actually true, then, you know, they should have no problems with saying to the states, look, you need to produce this pitch and you need to produce this pitch. And let's actually find out who's a good batsman, who can bat on all surfaces. Not.
I would love to see. What would you do if you could fucking magic wand it all? Would you move the Queensland Centre of Excellence to Townsville, and make them and have them a specialist in seaming, steamy, green, nasty wickets and that also turn square after 3 days?
Yeah. Well, or I would just say, every state's got to have, like, a regional wicket, a regional ground and a home ground, and the regional ground has to have very, very different conditions, and you have to play half your games at Newcastle or Cairns or Bendigo or, you know.
Or if you're New South Wales, play half your games in Broken Hill.
Yeah.
Where the deck's like Mumbai.
Yeah, that's right. And like you said, if you're Adelaide, you play half your games in Darwin and make the poor fuckers run around in the Darwin heat in the middle of summer.
Fuck yeah, because it'll be like Sharjah up there.
Yeah. But
As a punter, would you be more likely to watch Shield games?
Oh, shit. Let's go into the fact that sports need to diversify the way people can access their sports, and the Olympics does not fucking understand this. They want to sell...
But the Shield guys do, because they put all their stuff on the net.
That's right. But
no one watches it, but they still put it on.
I think more people probably watch it than when in the old days when it was on Fox 9 or whatever it used to be on.
I don't think they ever used to telecast the Shield. They used to do a reasonable job with the State One Dayers.
Yes, that's true.
And I think
9.
The State One Dayers do a better job, are better on Fox than they are on Channel 9.
Yeah.
Because on Channel 9 they cram them all into a month, and they make them all play in New South Wales because in Sydney because of television.
Yeah.
I mean, that sucks. That's not right. They shouldn't do that.
But I was thinking about new media today with that Olympics thing. So I've been listening to a little bit of White Line Wireless. And the very fact that an independent online group can go to Sri Lanka and provide basically what the ABC used to be.
Are you sure they're in Sri Lanka?
Yes, they are. Because the commentators today, one of them said, I went over to ask Davey Warner a question this morning and he told me to fuck off. They're in Sri Lanka. At least some of them are.
That's weird. I didn't think they were.
But and
they're
like, you know, that
media,
they're
though, obviously otherwise they would
no, but that, see, right. They're using, well, I think they're very clever, because what they're doing is they're using guys like Jeff Lemon and other journalists that are there covering the game. So they might have two guys that are there just to run the white line wireless setup, and then everybody else.
When you
is,
say guys, you mean women, because they were running a very Bechdel test positive,
yeah,
and commentary team.
Who was it that I heard today?
It was, Cricket Bat Cat and Neutron Girl. Those are the Twitter handles anyway.
Yeah, she was really good. I listened to a bit of commentary today and there was a lady on and she was fucking excellent. It's very different. It's very different. If you're used to listening to ABC, it's a little bit different. It's probably a little bit more like listening to us do cricket commentary. But the very fact that the technology has moved to a space, and I was actually thinking about this.
Well, also the fact that they're operating in contravention to
all the media laws,
and could be shut down by a legal injunction at any moment.
Yeah.
But
are crickets now? Are they just small enough that cricket don't care because it's a little?
I think so, and the same's true of the Test match so far.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the same was true of Roy and HG for many years.
And look, if ABC were
true,
over
actually,
there,
I'll tell you what, the same's true was originally true for the ACC, which is the Alternative Commentary Collective, which is a bunch of New Zealand comedians, radio DJs, and drunks who do a amazingly profane alternative commentary to all the New Zealand One Day matches. But in an odd twist of fate, they got adopted maybe not adopted, but certainly accepted by the powers that be, so that their little caravan is on the boundary at all the New Zealand one-day games.
Okay.
And they do an alternative commentary, which is ball-by-ball perfect, and yet the most offensive thing you've ever heard in your life. They don't ever swear, but they just get into the most hideous shit you could imagine.
So a little bit like your Twitter feed.
Well, a bit less reference to obscure GT sports car events.
But the fact that it, like, if you're fighting, so the Olympics basically think, the Olympics are a dinosaur, right? They're huge, yeah. They move very, very slowly, and they're going to fucking die eventually, and they don't know it's coming.
They're going to die a lot quicker than they think.
Yeah.
That meteor is just, you know, the meteor's coming.
Well,
because
the number
of people who give a fuck about archery just because Australia are not as many as there used to be.
Well, I actually, like, my flatmate, and there's a lot of people out there like that just love the contest, you know?
Just barrack for Australia.
Not even that, Australia. But just that they love the stories. They love the little bits of
the narrative. It's purely, we've said this before. The Olympics is sport for people who don't like sport. It's for people who want to, you know, they just see like a blank piece of paper and suddenly some producer has scripted a narrative. Here's Dave Smith. Both his legs disappeared in a car crash, but now he's doing archery for Australia, cunt. Here he is trying to win gold for Australia. Oh, ping, ping.
Now, the thing is, right, if you're a niche sport and you can create that. Now, if you've got the tools to create that narrative yourself for your niche followers, and you're to face it,
well, it's usually at the level of the individual, not the sport.
Well, archery is not making much Channel 7 coverage anyway. It's all fucking swimming and a bit of athletics and maybe some basketball.
No, not at this stage of the tourney. But if one of them was going for gold,
the Matildas maybe some shooting.
The Matildas sucked. They played really. No, the Matildas sucked in the game they played most recently. Played earlier in the week. The Matildas and the Kiwi girls lost. And the Kiwi girls lost to America, who are the, you know,
but
the
actually,
death star of women's football.
I actually think sports like golf and soccer and
get them out of here.
Well, not only get them out of here, but I actually think they'll figure out that it's not really that good for their brand. Like, golf must be figuring that out now.
Well,
like,
football already know it's bad for their brand because they know it's a waste of their time. None of the clubs want it.
Yeah. Like, golf would have got much more media coverage for the amazing finish they had in the PGA than they're ever going to get out of the Olympics because they're they're a big sport in the Olympics, but it's a little bit of noise in a lot of noise. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they could have two guys stripped completely naked and play the last four holes with their wangs hanging out, and it probably wouldn't get that much media coverage because that night Usain Bolt's running. So, like, what really matters? So
that's what Orlando Bloom was doing.
Yeah, that's what Orlando Bloom's doing. He's going into the golf. And all it takes is athletics or one of the big Olympic sports to go,
replace your divot, Orlando!
You guys are fucking not going to be in the Olympics, and the whole thing will just unravel. I don't know whether that will happen, whether they're that...
Oh, it will happen. And look, it's going to unravel quicker. Things unravel faster than you expect them to.
Mm.
As soon as people realise they're not getting the dollars out that they thought they would.
Yep.
They fucked up. And you know, having to do shit in Russia is going to change people's attitude.
Yeah. And that might be the tipping point. It might be, like, if some shit goes wrong in this, like, did you hear already one of the team officials has killed a robber?
Yeah, the Russians. The thing is that the Russian diplomatic attaché, who happens to know jiu-jitsu and killed a robber with his own gun, I don't think he was your common or garden variety diplomatic attaché. I think he might have been...
A highly skilled...
He might have had a certain set of skills.
Straight out of the Bourne Identity? Is that what you're saying?
I was thinking more Liam Neeson, you know, a particular set of skills. But, but also... The problem is you've got a country that's full of poor people that have access to weapons. What do you want? I mean, they're going to try and stick you up for money.
We're talking about the torch being run with like 5,000 bloody SWAT people on either side rather than cheering
that's
locals.
That's also because when the torch ran past my old school in 2000, somebody put it out with a fire extinguisher.
Mm. But
so that guy is responsible.
But even the fact that all the locals are like, well, perhaps you might want to spend the money on us getting some food or some basic education or, you know.
Brazil's not quite that fucked. It does have a very big have and have not thing.
Yeah.
They've already been through the World Cup, which was 2 years ago, which was bad in terms of that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
But it was nationwide, you know, at least... Hmm.
Hey, Doc, I've got some really some breaking news, and it's not going to make you happy.
Have you got the squirts, bro?
I'm really sad to report this, but Peter Fitzsimons agrees with us. It's all downhill from here.
How can it be downhill from the bottom, bro? How can it be downhill from the bottom? There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go from here, bro.
Well, let's talk about a sport that's just going swimmingly. Rugby league. The most fearsome.
We're not talking about he who cannot be.
We're not talking about him.
He who must not be named in the run on side.
Let's see him actually do something. I don't think I'm actually mad.
Other than fumble the fucking pill, which is all he's done for the last little while.
I'm not actually upset or, my dissatisfaction with that story is not about him. It's about the people that are reporting that story and calling him a superstar when he actually hasn't done anything for a couple of years. Like,
it's not been that long. And it's nice to see the Gold Coast get someone good after they got fucked over by your man,
Daddy
Gable
Cherry
Pants,
Evans,
Mr. Foran.
Mm.
Oh, no,
it was
Cherry Evans.
It was Cherry Evans. It was the double
basically
barrel.
Manly is full of cunty halves.
Mm.
They either renege on contracts or they're in the pocket of dodgy gamblers.
Mm. And this comes back to the...
I blame Adam.
This comes back to the story we were talking about earlier in the year where, you know, these guys are supposedly getting large chunks of extra cash from club supporters in brown paper bags. And then what do you do if you've got 10 grand of cash and you're a bogan from, you know, the country, New South Wales, you're
or
go
Auckland or anywhere.
Yeah, you're going to go and gamble and drink and take fucking drugs, aren't you? Like,
you're going to launder it in ways that are not detectable. You're going to invest in the cash economy.
So the most scary person in the Australian media is onto the story about Foran and a couple of dodgy gamblers and
both of the Forans, because it's both Liam and Kieran Foran, and this dodgy fucking gambler, the one who was putting money into Buzz Rothfield's accounts. So the Fairfax has dedicated anti-corruption investigative journalist Kate McClymont's onto this one. So they're all fucked, as near as I can tell.
Well, to give you an idea, she's brought down, what, two premiers and a couple of police ministers. Like,
she cracked open the South Coast council routes and
she'll go after you. She is just amazing. Like,
she doesn't care that you might find up and call her a fucking old mole, which is what what's his name, the dodgy gambler did. It's not going to matter a pinch of shit to her. More power to her.
She's just going to
fucking awesome, bro.
So I actually think there's a lot more of that to come.
I don't reckon you're wrong. And I think the funny thing is that we talked a little bit about Buzz Rothfield and his relationship with this dodgy gambler last week. It seems that Rothfield actually gave up some information about the Forans in his conversation with McClymont, the journalist, as though it was no big thing.
Yeah.
So there's a culture of this being no big thing in the league, and I expect in the Australian Football League as well, I expect this not in any way to be restricted to the rugby league. So this isn't a code v code thing, because everyone always assumes, oh, I don't like that code because you like the other code. No, they're all full of fucking knucklehead, dickhead, fucking wankers. They're all in the same situation. They're all getting the brown paper bags. They're all finding ways to use the brown paper bag, disposable income. And this is the way they do it.
I think it goes to a wider story about the way the salary cap and the way Australian sport is organised. And I think I might have had a little bit of a chat with Hoopsdog about how you could modify more towards the NBA cap in rugby league, so that if there are people outside...
We've talked about this a few times, I think.
Yeah, outside of the sort of official sponsors that want to give money to players or clubs in rugby league, sure, let them give that money, but then make it that money finds its way to every club, not just the Easts and the Broncos and the North Queenslands. Yeah,
not just the clubs that have got a lot of third-party sponsors.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, if you're in Canberra, you're going to struggle to compete against Brisbane, where it's a city of 2 million people versus a terrible frozen backwater. And I mean that in the kindest possible sense, Canberra, you fucking shithole. Build a stadium with a roof on it already.
Yeah. Like, where it's really, really cold, perhaps people would like to be warm. It's a crazy idea, I know.
Borrow ours. I mean, we're not using it because we didn't make the fucking finals. But we went to your joint, we beat you, you cunts. It's the concern in this, if you like, the small market teams, is that they're going to be outcompeted on that third party thing by places that have got bigger access to corporate dollar.
Yeah.
So have it all registered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. It's, you know,
interrogate people's bank accounts.
If people want to
around, make sure. I mean, the problem is that it's only now that we've got journalists deciding to follow this up, because I'm sure for a long time the journalists are inside the space. Danny Widler isn't following people around trying to find out how much fucking third-party cash they're chucking down the TAB.
The key point to this is she is not a sporting journalist. She is an investigative journalist that normally investigates corruption in politics. And obviously she's got a tip-off or something's tickled her interest and she's got into it. But she doesn't care what, who she burns, because... she
good
doesn't.
Good of the game is not a concern of hers.
Well, not even the good of the game, but like a lot of these guys rely on, you know, inside information on who's playing and who's not playing and little quotes and, you know, I need you to talk to me so I get a pull quote for my. But that sort of reporting is not actually. I actually think that sort of reporting is a little bit done now, because who wants to really read a match report with some standard stock quotes from, you know, the captain?
Like, I know. I think that there's still a place for that, but that's not why people like, you know, Danny Widler are people like Danny Widler. I mean, people like Danny Widler are people like Danny Widler because they want to be part of the story.
Yeah, that's right.
And you, to be part of the story in the same way that that Woj from the NBA is, or Chris Broussard is in the NBA, to be part of the story, you've got to have impeccable contacts.
But the
you've
difference
got to be able to stand up in front of the camera and say, my sources tell me X, Y, and Z, and know that people believe you because they know your sources are valid, because you've got a track record.
The thing about Woj is, right, he is...
Woj less so, because he's not so interested in the media spotlight. Although that's changing with the increase in the Yahoo media properties.
Yeah, if he thinks it's part, if he thinks it's good for the story, he will get up and say something that will not go down well with a player or a coach or a team.
Also, if it doesn't, well, yeah, he's got a. That's not quite true. He's got a patchy record on that because he goes after people who don't give him access. He doesn't go after people who do.
Yeah, he protects his sources a little.
Just
actually,
like, well, no, he just protects his relationships because he's a human being.
Yeah, that's right. Fair. And he's got a job to do. Hey, I just wanted to finish up on, I'm reading, and I have to admit that this is very, very poor by me because the Phoenix Suns are my NBA team. But I got an email from Amazon this week saying some crazy lawsuit in America, we've put some money back in your account because the government made us do that. You have some money to spend on Kindle books. I was like, oh, okay. And then I was listening to the Zach Lowe podcast with Jack McCallum, who
wrote the Dream Team book and the 7 Seconds or Less book.
Seven Seconds or Less book, which is considered one of the best books about basketball.
So and the 7 Seconds or Less book looks... 7 Seconds or Less is the story of the critically acclaimed Phoenix Suns of
2006.
The team that made Bezo love basketball.
Yeah, it is, actually. Yeah.
Because they played like men escaping from a burning building.
They did.
7 Seconds or Less wasn't the name, was the name for the reason. Basically, it was like they weren't aware that the shot clock went to 24.
Yeah. So for the people that don't know,
and
7 Seconds,
everyone loved them. I mean, I've got no ties to Phoenix, but I wanted to see them win the West as much as anyone. Well, partly because they'll play to the fucking Lakers, but and the Suns, but sorry, and the Spurs. But I wanted to see them win through, and I have no particular adherence to the Suns.
Well, the thing was, they played not like no one had ever played before, because teams had definitely played like this before. But if you looked at the NBA landscape then, it was lots of ISO ball, lots of sort of, you know, backs to the basket, dump the ball in, you know, slow possession.
Dominated. I mean, yeah. Shaq was the dominant personality of that era, the middle aughts. I mean, if you had Shaq, you'd win a tournament. You'd win a ring. I mean, the Lakers won with Shaq, and then Shaq went to Miami.
Miami won.
Exactly right.
But the fact that, and I never really considered this before, but he basically rang up the PR person at the Suns, who he knew, and said, I want to do this story where I come and hang out with the coaches for preseason. And he did it because the Suns, a little bit like Golden State are now, were quite an open to the media, like that they had a good relationship with the media. So they let him do it, and he produced this Sports Illustrated story, which was really well received. You know, it was like a real inside look into a team. And then someone came to him and said, oh, look, can you take that and turn it into a book? So he rang up Mike D'Antoni and said, oh, look, they want me to do this as a book. Would you mind me hanging out with the team for the whole season? And D'Antoni went, yeah, sure, no worries. And you think of that now, there is no way any team in the NBA would give a journalist access to the coaching staff and the players?
I don't know. It would depend. If you'd already done the case study and had been well received and your dudes had been happy with it, why not? Because it's all your PR people would be saying, this is going to look great, and you're going to have to give access to these people anyway because you're going to have a certain amount of time that you have to give over to media access. So why not just give it to Jack McCallum?
Yeah. Like, and I'm a guy, I have a really bad history with this, with reading. Before I had kids, I would do this a lot more often than I do, but I get into books, and this is a book that just drags you in. It is fucking fascinating, some of the stuff that he finds out. It is fascinating if you're a coach. It's fascinating if you're interested in sports. The motivations of the players. Like, you would think that...
It's fascinating if you own one of those terrible grey and orange Suns jerseys.
Yeah, that's true. I actually own a purple and white one, but still.
No, you own one of those ones with the grey, which is pretty much the worst. It's fun. Of all the Suns jerseys.
No, the ones
that's
now...
That's got to be one of the worst.
No, the black ones now are worse. I would love one of those... Bad. I would love one of those grey and orange jerseys. If you see one, you can get me one.
One of the old Barkley era, purple with the diagonal fucking Suns. That's the look.
The end of this season is the time to buy NBA jerseys when the changeover from Adidas to Nike. Because the word I've heard is that all the NBA stores, like all the NBA teams, have got to clear out all their.
Well, to be honest, right, the end of any season is. I mean, I was walking through a Rebel Sport in Christchurch a few weeks ago, and it was like, what do you want? You know, have Lillard for $70, you know, whatever you want. You have fucking anyone you want, you can just walk off. You're like, and the thing is, I don't have the body for a singlet, nor do I have the climate for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I probably don't have the body, but I wear singlets a lot, especially when I'm running, because it's...
Well, the climate you live in,
it's fucking hot.
Just let those pits, you know, vent them. But I always thought the jersey, which is a Major League Baseball idea, where they... Because Major League Baseball uniforms are kind of weird. They're kind of weird buttoned-up thing.
It's not something you'd wear out unless you were going bowling.
Well, exactly right. But even then, they look weird. But they do T-shirts that are replicas of the jersey with the colours and the logo and the number on the back.
Yeah.
And they sell like fucking shit. They really do well. I always thought that jersey NBA would go really well. And you do see
absolutely. Like the Suns black jersey looks fucking terrible as a jersey. But
I don't mean the sleeved jerseys, because they're still horrible plastic shit. I mean an actual cotton T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
With logos and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I don't mind. Some of the synthetics they've got now are pretty fucking good. Like I did the...
Yeah, that is true.
The shirt they gave us for doing the Gold Coast Marathon, half marathon, I don't know what they've done to the material, but they have made it, it's a synthetic and it breathes.
Yeah, that's a big change. I mean, I've got soccer like jerseys from 20 years ago, and it's like wearing a fucking garbage bag.
Oh, yeah, terrible.
And the ones now are dramas.
They breathe, and this thing feels like cotton. It feels soft like cotton. Like I put it on, I was like, "Oh man, this is a shirt I want to wear all the time."
Fucking pervert.
All right, Doc. So if you like good books, go and read 7 Seconds or Less. It was $3.50 on the fucking Kindle store. So
listen, there's a few more NBA things I want to get to.
You got anything else?
Yeah, I do. I got a few more NBA things. Your Suns, these delightful fucking Suns. I'd like to come back and retire as a Sun. And the Suns said what, Bezo? Not surprised you hung up at that point.
I was going to say, I guess we'll end it there because it just went dead.
No, we will not.
Have you got some more stuff?
I had some fire.
Okay, hang on. Let me hit record.
Some fire.
Recording now.
So, your 7 Seconds or Less Sons.
Yes.
Had a man come to them last week. Mari Stoudemire.
Yep.
And he said, I've always felt myself a son. Can I retire as a son? And what did your sons tell him?
Get fucked.
They told him to get fucked. Why did they tell him to get fucked, Bezo? Because they're cunts.
Maybe.
There's no reason on earth to tell Amari Stoudemire to fuck off when he wants to retire as a son. It's not going to cost you any money.
I
just sign him for a day, let him retire, and fucking do it. It's not a fucking issue.
I am doubtful that the story is exactly as he said.
You cyber fucking apologist.
No, definitely not a cyber apologist. My opinion of the because I loved Stoudemire in that run. Like, he didn't play in the year that this book is on, but he's a really interesting character. You know, you talk about guys coming from, you know, pulling themselves up to professional sportsmen and becoming something. He is like, mate, he really pulled himself up from.
He was from a dark place.
Yeah, he came from a dark fucking place.
He came from like a messy fucking drug addled shithole in Florida, didn't he?
Yeah, and look, he's a he was not a great teammate as a young player, and I think he improved on that. I actually think that he's improved himself as a person quite a bit. Like, you know, a lot of guys that come from those dark places, they basically take the money and continue down that dark path. He is not one of them. Like, I think he's learned a second language. He's a wine connoisseur. Like, he's really tried to expand himself.
Well, he's gone off to play for a club he owns.
Yeah, which is, you know, quite a nice touch, because obviously though that those home games will get pretty well populated, I would imagine, considering what their normal crowds would be. Like, if you're if you live locally, you'd probably get popped down to see a Murray Stoudemire, wouldn't you? Like, we talked about this with Andrew Bogut. Like, would Andrew Bogut buy half of the Melbourne NBL side, which he could probably do out of his fucking pocket change, and, you know, decide to sit on the bench and come on for 6 minutes a game?
No, I think he'd just sit in the crowd.
He'd just sit in the crowd, maybe. But, like, I could
the
totally...
reflected glory would help, you know.
Yeah, I could totally see him, like, you know, stumbling around the floor for 6 minutes, because he wouldn't care how he fucking looked. But he would definitely care about the amount of punters through the door to watch basketball, because he's very passionate about Australian basketball for all his flaws.
Well, he doesn't have that many flaws. He's just...
he's just a right-wing cunt.
Well, I think he's just a bit broken in the head. Which, you know, he's on the internet. A lot of people are broken in the head.
Yeah. Hey, we're a little bit broken.
If we weren't broken, we wouldn't have all these wonderful people listening to us. Hey,
that's right.
Your country has embarrassed itself on the international stage again.
Again?
A regular segment, how have Red Bull fucked Dan Ricciardo this week?
Is this about drinking out of shoes?
But Dan fucked himself. Can you explain to me why Dan Ricciardo decided to fill his shoe with champagne and drink from it? This is not unprecedented. I've seen Dave Reynolds do it, who was for the V8 supercars on the Gold Coast. And I've seen Jack Miller when he won the MotoGP race. He did that as well.
So this popped up on Facebook, right? And it popped up like every Australian does this when they win something. They fucking put beer in their shoe and drink it. And I'm like, did I miss the memo? It's like, I've won a few tournaments. The first time I've seen it.
Look, I'm familiar with the idea of doing shoeies or boot skulls, as they were called. Mm-hmm. But generally the most feral rugby-playing munters would do, you know. We went to some... college event, and there was boot skulls involved, and I'm not prepared to drink anything.
No.
Anything that's got someone else's feet in it, that's not a thing. I like a nice clean beer glass or a nice clean champagne flute. I'm not drinking out of something that's had feet in it.
No, especially not feet that have just done a fucking formula.
And I don't understand why that was a thing that he thought we needed to see him do. Anywho.
It's just bizarre, hey.
So he's a fucking idiot.
But he came second.
Yeah, but he finished second, and he beat his teammate. And his teammate actually moved out of his way at one point because of the tyre strategy. So I don't know what Red Bull are up to, but they are
being nice
playing
to
a
Australians,
long con on him. They're going to fuck him at the end, stab him in the back when he's not expecting it. The one thing that's come out of IndyCar that I was going to throw in, because I assumed it would be a slow news week, Target Chip Ganassi Racing, which is one of the IndyCar teams. You know, there's always been the Target car. So they're going to pull out at the end of the year because the retail sector in America is fucked. and Target have got $2.50 to rub together. So after 27 years and my entire experience of IndyCar racing, because I started watching when the Gold Coast IndyCar Grand Prix.
Yeah, I actually watched it's funny, like, I got a weird relationship with motorsport, but for quite a while there, I religiously watched IndyCar. I love that race, that Gold Coast race. I thought it was fascinating. Particularly that the one I remember is when Mansell came across from Formula One.
93, yeah.
And everyone said, look, he's not going to do any good. He's used to the flappy paddle gearboxes. You know, he hasn't fucking done a stick.
Suspension.
Hasn't done this, hasn't done that. And he came out and he fucking smashed the race, finished with his hands bleeding from, you know, attacking the gear stick for the whole race. But won and basically went, doesn't matter what car you put me in, I'm a fucking good racer. And I just
got out, and his foot was still broken from a testing accident. So he got out and he tried to put weight on it and he almost collapsed. So he's limping away from the car and was going, oh, that's Nigel. He's a big fucking drama queen. But literally he's got a hand that's raw mince. And a foot that's fucked, and he's just sort of and the car ran out of petrol on the slowdown lap.
Yeah,
so that was So, but anyway, the target team have been the target team since before 91. And I was thinking about teams that have had the same sponsor for as long as that, and I can't think of a single sporting team, no matter what the context, that have had the same sponsor. For as long as
that's interesting, isn't it?
IndyCar team. I was trying to think of rugby league teams, and the St. George team having the St. George logos, but that's not that. That's only been since the late 90s.
What about Pertec for the Eels?
No, because they were that's very new. I think
no, that's a fairly old. That's like late 80s, isn't it? Didn't they take over?
No.
Oh, okay. This must be a memory.
They were James Hardy in the 80s.
Yeah, they were too. That's right.
Through the 80s, and then they were Asics. They were Asics for most of the 90s.
Wow, I can't remember that. That is a perfect one to throw out to our listening audience. What is the longest single sponsorship for a team? There would have to be something.
Yeah, I mean. I was thinking maybe SGIO with the West Coast Eagles, but the last time I saw them, they were sponsored by Bankwest. So
that might be the same. It might be the same company, just renamed.
Well, fair enough. I mean, HCF were big sponsors of the Swans in the 80s, but now it's QBE. QBE have been sponsoring the Swans for a while, but 27 years is a fucking long time. I can't think of anything remotely comparable. And it's funny how sponsors. So, the name on the shirt or the name on the flanks of the car or the truck or whatever you're doing are so wedded and embedded in your mindset. I mean, you can't, it's hard to see, a lot of these international football jerseys with a fucking logo on them.
So that's really interesting because you go to some of those niche sports, right, where the sponsors actually sort of own the sport.
Yeah. The Red Bull sport.
Red Bull like the energy drinks basically own mountain biking.
Basically, the energy drinks are the Marlboro and Camel.
And
this generation.
Maybe a little bit too closely aligned to those things. I wonder whether we'll get the same.
The parallels you can draw are a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you look back at, say, Formula One in the 80s, it was. It seems to be sponsored by Marlboro
or rugby league.
Or rugby league, because or any kind of sport. There was always
Benson and Hedges with cricket.
Yeah, it was either Philip Morris or WD and HO Wills or RJ Reynolds, which is Camel and brands like that. And it's the same kind of thing. You're either part of the Monster family or the Red Bull family or the Rockstar family.
Mm.
In the same way that you're either part of the Philip Morris or the or the WD and HO Wills family.
Mm. Yeah, but that's interesting. I would have thought there'd be someone in football in Europe that would have had a sponsorship that was.
I would have thought that too, but I can't think of it. Certainly not in England.
Yeah.
But the Benson Hedges Cup's a good example. I mean, if you think of they ran, it's not still running, but
yeah. But they had a very long run.
They sponsored cricket for a very long time, didn't they?
Yep.
Even events you can't think of. I mean, fucking James Hardy 1000 and things like that. It just didn't... it's a shame to see an end, but that's the nature of the beast when your industry is
changes
disappearing up its own asshole. And also, I think they've got a CEO who, for many years, they had a CEO who was very pro, who was very pro motorsport and really thought they got a lot out of it. And they probably did, but they've got a new one who's purely basically an accountant who says,
"Yeah, nah."
And they'll just disappear, and it'll be the end of them.
Yep. All right, Doc, should we come back and talk some Tunes?
We should disappear as well.
Mm. All right, I'll catch you on the flip side. Oh, isn't that going to be a joy to edit? I think I've got about 9 different fucking files.
Oh,
that's all right. I've been...
Internets, bro. Oh, fuck. You know what we didn't talk about?
What?
We didn't talk about your man Draymond.
No, we didn't get it into this.
And he's fucking Draymond.
That would have been a good tie into an Orlando Bloom, Jack.
It is a blue Orlando Bloom, but the first thing was that his statement, we've got to add this in, his statement, when he said, he's like, "Oh, I'm really sorry about it," but it really tells you about internet privacy. We're all just one deck away. I mean, we're all just one click away, is what he said. I misread that. When I wrote it down, the C and the L are a bit too close together. Like, we're all just one click away from posting our cock on the internet.
Draymond.
That was a decision you made, fucking dickhead. And basically, you're not going to post your cock on the internet unless you're happy with it.
Yeah.
Unless you think it's something that people are going to be impressed by.
Draymond. Draymond's like he's a little bit like he really is this generation's Dennis Rodman.
He's like a normie Dennis Rodman, isn't he?
Yeah. Because
he's not
like
doing the frocks, he's not doing the piercings, but he is doing the fucking stupid behaviour.
But the thing
he's a Web 2.0 Dennis Rodman.
I don't think Dennis Rodman could exist in this NBA. I really think he would just be suspended out of the league.
No, because his play was fantastic.
Yeah, but he just did, like, you know.
He wasn't dirty. He was on the court. He was.
Yeah, yeah.
He was just fucking, he nailed it. He was always good on the court.
Wow.
But he did, and they're not too concerned by what you get up to off the court.
Sri Lanka are about to lead by 400.
Yeah, that's done. All right, let's recharge and all that sort of stuff.
All right, sounds good. See you soon.
The sun's...